I thought it was all Noah's fault.
Well, it is. It's Noah's fault too. But the audience are assholes because they let Noah sucker them into this idea. You see, some of the audience seems to think that I'm Linux and open source averse, even though I edit the shows on Jupiter Broadcasting, which are all around Linux or open source. I contribute to open source, as you've mentioned.
That's true. We have several projects that you contribute to that are either related to the network or help the network, like JBot. Yeah. And also, we've talked even on this here show about projects we're contributing to for podcast production on Linux.
Yep. And I think it's all Noah's fault because he seems to have given people this.
Are you saying you've been typecast, Rika? You've been cast as the Windows guy.
Yeah, I'm the Microsoft villain of Jupiter Broadcasting. Or hey, I'll be open. Maybe I'm the Apple villain.
why do you think that is?
Because you are a open source zealot and fanatic, and you tend to give me crap at every turn just because I use the superior software.
Whoa.
Okay, so first of all, I would take exception to the claim that the software that you always choose to use is superior. That's number one. Second thing is, I don't recall ever giving you too much crap in public. I mean,
we have
spirited discussions, as you might call them.
You've done it on this show, Noah.
I think he's basing it on comments.
Yeah.
What did
It's not like you directly call me out. You just have these passing snide comments.
I see.
Well, it's like a sniper is what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I guess my perception of it is that a lot of us that are heavily invested and as you might, you know, I guess you would call it a zealot, but I would just say that I have an undying passion for Linux. Those people and people like me, I wonder if it's not partly this idea that we have made huge sacrifices in our personal and professional lives. I could double my income if I was willing to take on Windows clients and our family members I don't talk to.
Right. Yeah. When I decided I was no longer, I just couldn't really do IT anymore. It was really, I was so sick of supporting Windows.
Yeah.
See, That logic makes no sense to me, though, because you're telling me that because I'm not willing to sacrifice my time that's already limited because I do a crap ton of stuff.
Yeah.
That I'm open source averse.
But that you are not entitled to the same level of awe and appreciation and
You're telling me that there should be a tiered system of appreciation
for
people that are embracing open source?
I'm saying that it takes a special amount of effort to take the road less traveled, and I'm saying that it takes almost no effort to follow down the road which is most common. If you go to set up a web server and you don't use Linux, then you're an idiot.
And so
what I'm saying is when somebody who comes and goes, "Hey guys, guess what? I use Linux in a web server." Go, "Good job. Bravo for you." Same as 98% of the rest of the industry. But when you come in and say, "Hey, you know what? We went out to a conference and we sat down and we broadcasted live video on Linux on a machine that we built in 24 hours and then brought it over here and set up and like we're finishing up the operating system install."
No.
Literally
I'm gonna
on
let you
the
finish.
Table.
I'm going to let you finish. But who helped you set all of that up?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that the compromise there wasn't your compromise to make. If it blew up, it wasn't your, you still got your paycheck. Your personal things still went for it.
I'm pretty sure there would have been some issues.
But what I'm saying is it's not your personal sacrifice that was on the line there. That and it wasn't mine either, to be honest. It was Chris that time that was taking the bullet. If it didn't work out, he's the one that it's his network, it's his show, it's his advertisers that are on the line if it doesn't work out.
But for example, with video editors, for example, if I opt to use an open source video editor, that means that the entire network will get lower quality output.
Well, that's not
output.
That's not really your decision, though.
Well, I mean, technically, at the end of the day, it is. I don't think Chris would stop me if I wanted to use that. Hold on a second now.
I
would reframe it like this. If Rekai came to me and said that, "Hey, Chris, I think Cadian Live can seriously do everything we need to produce our shows and edit them, I think we could try it. Yeah, sure. I think we would. I would that day be like, yeah, sure, let's do a run. Yeah,
I understand that, but what I'm saying is, I think you guys are missing this. What I'm saying is, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't necessarily affect him personally, other than he has got to listen to the verbal recourse when it doesn't work out.
No, what your message kind of has been for the last minute is, you haven't demonstrated the sacrifices you have made to make it work under Linux, and the implied message is there that you have to make sacrifices to make something work under Linux.
Oh yeah.
And then that's where I get really worried about, well, then how the hell can we ever expect anybody to want to switch to this platform? Hey guys, come to Linux where you make a shit ton of compromises.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a horrible pitch.
I think you're making
sacrifices either way. I think they're different sacrifices under Linux, and I think that oftentimes there are sacrifices that we are not used to making. So for example, nobody really thinks twice when Windows blue screens and crashes and you have to restart. Nobody really talks about the fact that in Windows 10, it's just going to restart. You're going to lose all your unsaved work automatically, and there's really nothing you can do about it. Those are just things that those are sacrifices. They're just ones that we have grown accustomed to, and we just don't care.
That's how it works now.
Yeah, yeah, we just don't care, and so we don't talk about them.
So what you're saying is that Linux shouldn't hold itself to a higher standard and just make better software that works and does what you want it to do?
I think that Linux should hold itself to its own standard, and I think that people, as supporters of Linux and open source, it is incumbent upon us to go ahead and take the first lashings and live through the pain of the Linux so that the users down the road that will eventually be coming to it have a smoother experience. So, for example, I see myself, it's my job to go try all of the software and all the things. It's good for us to go try OBS the first time it comes out before it's even really available. And, well, there's a bunch of bugs and there's not even buttons to switch scenes.
Sure.
Because 8 months later, I sold that same solution to a church.
Sure.
And by that time, everything had gotten perfective. And I knew all the little ins and outs of how to make it a smooth experience for them.
So
Linux wasn't a compromise for them.
I don't mean any disrespect at all when I say this. This is just, I'm throwing this out there as a concept to you.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the argument you're making is that works when it's not a competitive environment. And so if you're doing Let's Plays and you're doing video game related content, it might not be an underestimate to say there might be 2 million different people on YouTube that are doing that same thing.
Sure.
And so any competitive disadvantage or handicap you decide to take, boy, that's a hell of a calculation.
Right.
And then now this is the part where I really mean no disrespect, and I'm just asking you just intellectually, is it possible that this principle has been more successful for you in Grand Forks than it would say in Seattle, where there could be 500 IT companies locally that offer the same service? And it might even be more like 1500.
Oh, sure. Of course.
I guess what I'm still trying to say is any kind of competitive disadvantage you take costs so much more where there's extreme competition. And your argument so far, and I'm obviously an advocate here, but your argument so far is take some compromises and maybe be a little bit competitively disadvantaged for a bit.
Sure. And I think that were true if I was an isolated case, right? But I'm not. Red Hat is a multi-billion dollar company, and they're doing the exact same thing I'm doing. They're taking LibreOffice and replacing Microsoft Office with it. And Southeast Linux Fest is doing the exact same thing I'm doing. They're taking Macs and replacing them with ThinkPads with Ubuntu Mate. And Scale is doing the exact same thing I'm doing. They're taking enterprise-grade Wi-Fi access points, $1,200 Ruckus access points, and replacing them with $35 TP-Link flashed OpenWRT routers.
Right.
So there are places all over the place that are doing the same things, and they are all having success. And this is across North Carolina and California.
I agree.
I do think, yes, I absolutely think that I have, that as a 29-year-old person who started an IT company, in college, yes, I think I had a much easier time in Grand Forks, North Dakota, town of 50,000 people than I would in Seattle, where everyone is doing that, right? Yes, absolutely. There's some truth to that.
Just full disclosure, because I was just pushing. One of the things that made me more advantageous and competitively kind of above everybody else was I was the guy that knew Linux.
Yeah.
And so that's why I got the clients I got because if they had Linux, Mac, and Windows, there was basically one guy. So for me, it was a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
Total disclosure there.
Around here, I don't think that people, most of my clients are probably not that not that technically literate to understand that. But what they do understand is that they don't call us back as much as they call the other people back.
That's the other thing you never mentioned, Noah, is you never mention when you come to me for support to fix your Linux issues.
That's just because you have super good Google skills. Foo, let's
well, that yeah. And I actually know Linux.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And in fact, thanks to you, I have modified my Pac-Man config to be way funnier. Now, I think you should also maybe possibly consider looking at this as an advantage, because there is a dirty, dirty secret about the Jupiter Broadcasting Network. And you represent
a
dark matter number that I will tell you, but I'm gonna reveal one of our dirtiest secrets.
Okay.
But first, Patreon.com/today. For a limited time, for a little bit longer, we would get in while we... I don't know what we're going to rename. In fact, I would love suggestions that are not taken on Patreon. We want to come up with a new name that represents the entire network.
Not Jupiter, because Jupiter's taken.
Yeah, and Jupiter Broadcasting isn't, but it's very long. And by the way, by discussing this with you, I am sort of taking faith that you won't just squat on something. I want your genuine input.
Or if you do squat on something... give us the login info so we can change it.
Yeah, because there's a few that really could be would be great. Anyways, if you have any ideas, let me know at ChrisLAS. I don't have the full pitch yet, but 2017, this Patreon page is going to matter more than ever. And so there's a few things I'm trying to do to thank you for supporting us. Now, I'm giving User Air 10 episodes. We're at episode 6 right now. And if I'm being honest, I'm getting tempted. I've gotten a few emails. I'm getting tempted about doing sponsorships, because if I could get a couple extra $1,000 a month into this network, I could do a lot of things.
Tell me about it.
I know.
There's like so much stuff that we just have waiting in the wings that we haven't done because it's not financially viable yet.
I almost wonder if I should, because I actually think maybe the silent majority is okay with advertising, is what I actually am starting to come to.
Yeah.
And so maybe that is actually okay. And so maybe what we do is we use the Patreon funding to offset how many sponsors we have in the show. I'm not sure what it is. My dream has always been sponsor free, to do an entire show I want to do a top tier show on the network that is completely sponsor free to prove that it can work. But we need your support. Patreon.com/today. This show, one of the things that I think maybe we don't prepare a lot ahead of time, which I love about this show. But I do spend a lot of time afterwards making it good, as good as I can. And that does take a considerable bit of my time. And not to be that guy, but you've seen this hair. My time is very valuable. There's a lot of things on the network I could be doing. And I'm not even saying that to be that guy. It's just there is much, much, much to do. As Rikai was just sort of implying. But I want to spend my time, what I do work on, I want to spend my time doing it right. And this show is one of them. The show, it encompasses a lot of theories, a lot of planning, a lot of visions, a lot of discussions, a lot of, well, maybe one day, if only we could do all of, a lot of that is coming to fruition right here in this show. Back end stuff, editing stuff, all kinds of little things that we've been working on. There is actually, just as an example, we've recently been invited to a private beta, which I've sort of been considering covering on this show, that is a total podcast platform. It is a replacement for our entire website. It integrates advertiser tracking. It integrates Patreon support. It integrates download counting, RSS feed generation. And it's done by somebody who has a lot of standing in the podcast industry. And we're using User Air behind the scenes to test that platform. Not that we will necessarily change overnight, but we want to make sure that Jupiter Broadcasting is staying competitive. And User Air offers us a chance to try all of these things that we've wanted to do 10 years into all of this, that now, boy, if I was starting something today, what the hell would I do? How would I do it different? How many times have you thought about that? Man, if I was doing this today, if I knew what I knew, how would I do it differently? That's what User Air is. And I love I love the idea of it being totally listener supported. But to be frank with you, we need a lot more support. Once we get to around episode 10, I'm hoping that we'll have like the recording schedule nailed down. We'll maybe have figured out guests, and I'll have an idea of the pitch I'm going to give to advertisers. Or we'll have an idea if we've gotten enough support from the audience. Patreon.com/today. Rikai, I truly believe that you represent the dark matter user of the Jupiter Broadcasting Network. The truth is, a lot of our downloads come from Windows users.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, a lot of our website visits, a lot of our downloads, a lot of people emailing us with questions. Because like you, myself, and Noah, we all research something before we switch. And so we really kind of sometimes we really go deep and we just dig in and watch every piece of content we can. I know before I moved into the RV, I watched everything on the subject on YouTube. I was so hungry for content, and now I still watch the videos on the and so a lot of people on Windows that are sort of looking at the Linux side of the fence,
yeah,
they're watching JB content to get a feel of what things are like. And you represent that toe in the water.
Well, I also feel like there's probably another category of usage in there that are like me, where they straddle the line and they run multiple platforms.
Yeah, for sure.
And they just happen to have their podcast downloader on the Windows side.
Like Johnny, you walk the line. You walk the line.
I walk the line.
Noah walks into a bar and he ends up at a radio station.
I had a client that is hosting an event this week, and they wanted to have a local radio station come out and cover them. So immediately, as soon as I saw that work order come in, I'm like, yeah, I'm taking that, because that's one thing that my employees have to put up with, is that these days I do the work that I want to do, and then the rest of it gets fettered out to other people.
Good
and I had some personal interest in this, because I have a vested interest in broadcasting as well, as it's just
kind
of and a beer, of course. So I go out and I meet this radio station, and I let the one of the companies that I'm working with know that I'm going to need some changes on their network. And basically, what they told me was, "Piss off, we got it. Don't worry about that. It'll work just fine." And I had then contacted the manufacturer of this box, and I said, I need to know some of the network parameters of how this needs to be configured. And they said, well, you need this port and this port for open on the firewall. So lo and behold, I show up and we
connect. So this is a box that they put on their land that ends up connecting to a system on another network?
Yeah.
And so it has to go, okay, all right.
Yeah,
okay.
And we'll go into detail, because the box in itself is actually kind of cool, but that's a different story. But so we get there and we plug this box in and it doesn't connect. And so the guy looks at me and I said, I know why it's not connecting. I couldn't get anyone to do anything about it. So I write another email, you know, carefully worded, but basically I said, just so you know, when I asked you to do this last night, I was correct. And so this is what you need to do. So if we could do it now while this guy's standing here, while we're all waiting, that would be terrific. So changes got made. And what this box is, it's really cool. It is an IP mixer. So you get XLR inputs on the back. And it has a program output, so there's XLR outputs if you want to send to like a house sound thing. And then there are four return jacks for headphones. And you get, of course, a potentiometer for each one of those headphone jacks, as well as sliders for all of the microphone jacks. But instead of just mixing the sound and sending it out to a computer or a recording deck, what it does is it encodes all of that audio into an IP stream, sends it over the internet to an identical box on the other end, and then that is received, and from there, that can be plugged into the soundboard. So to condense that down, for if you weren't following that, basically what that means is Chris has to take a microphone stand and a microphone and a pair of headphones and a mixer and a power supply for the mixer and an audio USB audio interface and a laptop and another laptop so they can bring the mumble room in. And cables to connect all of this stuff together, and it just extrapolates out huge.
In fact,
right?
What you are literally defining is the reason why we decided not to do Open Media Vault, or I'm sorry,
yes.
Open Daylight Summit Live.
Yes, but as a selfish side note, I was actually happy it worked out that way, because that was super fun.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah, but so what I did was we're setting all this stuff up, and what I was able to do was kind of play with it a little bit, and then the most crazy thing is he plugs his microphone into this box. He plugs his headphones into this box and he pushes a button. And any of the, you know, if they have somebody that's calling in, it's coming into the studio and it gets routed to his headphones through that return jack. And he's sending all of his audio through that microphone jack. So all of the all of the moving parts, all of the difficult heavy lifting is happening at the studio, and he just has this little box that he has an Ethernet cable, an XLR cable, and a quarter-inch TRS cable plugged in, and that's it.
Okay, so here's what the advantage is that Noah comes in as a line into our mixer, into mixer. So it's my compression settings, it's not just that it's my EQ and my compression, it is my compressor. You see, there is a difference in the way Noah's compressor sounds versus the way my compressor sounds. Yep. They're just two different pieces of equipment. Mm-hmm. So there's a very slight difference in sound. However, we are both using the same exact microphone in very similar setups. We try to get it very close, but this would make it perfectly close because it would just be like a mic into my mixer.
So the compression algorithm it's using is G.11, G.22... PCM tie line music.
And this could become actually more important than we think. The User Air Show may miss a week from time to time. We don't mean to. It's just we all have a lot going on. And I think as the show goes on, we'll nail it down. But in the meantime, subscribe to our RSS feed. Go to air.show. That'll take you to the User Air page. And then any of the shows. You click it, you'll see the RSS feed. And exclusively for those of you who are subscribing, from time to time, we will be publishing our diamond collection. Now, the first diamond collection, it's already out. It went out to the RSS feed. And it's stuff that didn't make it into the show. The stuff that was the worst. Actually, I called it the very best of the worst. The very best of our worst. From time to time, will be published to the RSS feed, just to our RSS subscribers. And I'll tell you why. I don't even want JupiterBroadcasting.com to be the main way people get this show. I want it to be RSS. I want because what it does as content creators is it frees us up to release as much or as little as we want. And as long as we know you're subscribed, you're going to get it. And that's going to make this show better. And so to kind of encourage you to grab the RSS feed, and I'm going to do it for the video feed and the audio feed for this show. Every now and then, I kind of am roughly planning every 5 episodes, I'm going to release stuff that never made it out into public. Grab the RSS feed. It's in our show notes. And every now and then, you will automatically get an episode from our Diamond Collection.
I have a lot of things that I occupy my free time with. I like to head out to the lake and spend some time there. But another thing I like to do is spend some time at the gun range. And it started back in about 2007, 2008. I was attending the University of North Dakota, and there was a group on campus called Females for Firearms, and they were looking for somebody to take them out and teach these young women how to manipulate and handle firearms properly, safely. And so I had no formal education on it, but having been to the gun range numerous times, I said, sure, I'll do that. So I went out and had done a couple of range sessions with a couple of women and showed them how to use these firearms. And as the group started to grow, they eventually rented part of a range, and they were going to bring like 40 some gals in, and they were all going to come to me to do this firearm instructing. And I thought, you know, I need to go get some professional training. I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm just basically showing people what I've learned from being at the range. And that was an eye-opening experience. So I spent a week at an academy learning how to teach other people about firearms. And to be quite honest, I learned a lot of my own bad habits and how to correct those.
Yeah.
So there are some rules I can't quite square. And so I don't like the 10 commandments of the NRA or whatever. I go by 3 rules. Always keep the firearm pointed in a safe direction at all times. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on the target. And keep in mind you're in possession of a firearm. If used negligently or maliciously, it could hurt and or kill you and or someone else. And what I found is those 3 rules we can abide by 100% of the time, and you can break any one of the 3 rules and not kill somebody.
I'm curious. So, Rikai, do you mind if I disclose your state of origin? You know, you said it before on air, but...
Yeah, sure.
So, Rikai comes from Maine, which is on my bucket list of places to RV in. And I'm kind of curious, because that is about as far away as you could possibly be from this exact position right now.
Except for Florida.
What is your take? What is your culture? What is your upbringing on this issue?
Firearms are obviously very popular in Maine. There's a lot of hunting.
I'm curious. Yeah,
there's a lot of hunting because it's mostly woods. There's a lot of animals in those woods. So people go hunting a lot.
Like here in Washington.
Even more so, I would think, because like there's a lot of woods and not a lot of people. Washington has a lot of people. So
on the west side. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose. But personally, I've never been too interested in gun stuff, so I just
Was it part of your family culture at all?
No.
It was a big part of my one part of my family culture.
It was not part of my family culture at all.
That's exactly where I was going, because when you go to Noah's house and he gives you a tour, he's got a beautiful house, he's got a beautiful family, he's got a lot of automated stuff, and he's got a nice collection of guns. And if you ever try to go to Noah's house, you should keep that in mind.
The front door is definitely there for your protection, not mine. But I didn't grow up around guns. I didn't grow up, nobody in my family used guns. All of my family respected the Second Amendment and people's right to own guns, but they never owned guns themselves. And it wasn't until I got into my later years in high school that I had some friends and I had gotten taken out to the range. And I think the first time I shot a, you know, 22 rifle or a shotgun, and then it was just, I was just sold. And I bought over the last 10 years, I probably bought every gun I could get my hands on. And, I've got a Barrett 50, BMG, which is the largest, rifle caliber that you can own legally. The thing will go through an engine block of a semi. It's so powerful. And I just love guns. And so I have spent the last couple of years now instructing and teaching people how to effectively and safely handle firearms. So I teach everything from the introduction courses, which are things like my family member or husband has a firearm in the house. I don't want to use it. I don't want to shoot it. I don't want to do anything with it. I just want to know how I can remain safe in my house because somebody else in my family owns a gun. So what do I need to know to be safe in my household? I teach that course all the way up to some of the advanced, tactical courses on how to defend yourself out in public and stuff.
I will jump in here and I'll say, you know, my experience has been with you just standing next to you as somebody who hasn't gone through all of the training but has gone through some basic training.
Sure.
I can just see in the way that you even the way you look at them, the way you touch them, the way you have them stored, the way that when you show them. Yeah. I can tell that there is a lot of caution and safety there.
Yeah.
But you said something that I kind of want to ask you about. You said you love them.
I do. I love them.
I'll tell you. I don't own a firearm. I've thought about it, and I've always been fascinated by the debate about firearms because I don't have a dog in the hunt. So I've enjoyed watching both sides of it. And it to me, if I were to take a 10,000-foot view, it would seem to be a debate between the ultimate power to take a life
mm-hmm.
and the decision between not having those types of tools.
Good. Yeah.
Would you agree? And so if you do agree, is that why you like them so much?
So I don't view the firearm as something to take a life any more than I view my Jeep as something to take a life. They're both tools, and they are both, if used incorrectly.
Okay, so let me put it a different way. It is a form of control. If somebody were to break into my home tonight, and if I had a gun next to my bed, I have much more control over that situation.
Gotcha. So the way I look at that is, it is my job first, and one of the worst things I could ever imagine is taking somebody else's life. But higher on that list, as selfish as it sounds, is my own life or the life of my family or my kids. And if I had to make a choice between those two, I wouldn't even have to think about it. The using a firearm, it definitely carries the it definitely is a lethal device. However, your goal, and the goal that I've never taught a student, that they should try to kill anyone that breaks into their house. Your goal is to significantly affect an opponent's ability to present a lethal threat to you or somebody you're trying to protect, whatever that happens to mean. Now, we have found, after a lot of studying and looking at a lot of different tactical ways, the most effective way to stop somebody that means you to do you harm is to place multiple shots in the upper center chest. And that just so happens to have the unfortunate side effect of that person being likely to die. And so you need to be fully aware, and I am fully aware and cognizant of the fact that if I ever had to deploy a firearm, I'm deploying lethal force, and sure. There is a high probability that person won't come out of it alive.
Let's take this to like a really crazy real level here for a
sure.
second. And put Rekai in the spotlight. So Rekai, the Jupiter Broadcasting Studio is the address is discoverable if people want to look hard enough. Mm-hmm. They can find out the place that you and I are often at. Sometimes where you and I are sleeping, we're completely unaware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Would you feel a certain level of security if you had a firearm up in your room?
I suppose, but at the same time, I don't feel like there's enough of a threat of that to warrant me going out of my way to get a firearm. And I don't quite know why that is, but I feel like if people are going to break into this place, they're probably not going to break into it with the intention of killing me. They just want whatever's here, and they can take it. I mean, it's a lot of equipment, Chris, but I'm sure most of it's insured. You can get new equipment. I care more about my life. and
just smile for the cameras.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I that's sort of how I have felt. In fact, just a couple of days ago, the most real that Hadi and I ever got in the RV is we boondock from time to time. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of slang for saying sometimes we camp in city spaces that are a little bit of gray and sketch.
Oh.
And so last Wednesday, as we record this, it was a crazy ass long unfiltered. You remember, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we decided, because I knew it was going to be kind of a ball buster, we decided to park the RV in Smoky Point. And we had walked around for a bit and run into a couple of different sketch people that were probably, they probably needed some sort of assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another rig that pulled up next to us that looked like it was in pretty bad shape. And so for the first time ever, I decided to take the keys from the spot that I normally hold and hide them and put them next to me in the bed. So that way, if somebody wanted to get the keys to my rig, they'd have to come through me first. And when Hadia asked, why are you putting your keys here? I explained, well, if they want to take the rig, they're going to have to come through us first. She's like, oh, shit, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. It got very real that all of a sudden we were staying in a space where we were potentially under a little bit of different threat. But even in that scenario, I think I would rather be killed than take another person's life. I think that's just what I come down to, is if mm-hmm. they want to come in and take my shit, I can replace my shit. And if they want to take my life, yeah, you know, all right, I'm going to go sometime anyways.
I'm going to try and phrase this in a very careful way. And I want to phrase the question very respectfully, but, would you feel the same way if your kids were in there?
No.
And that's kind of what I've come down to. And I'll be very honest with you and blunt. I wouldn't. I would rather be, the saying is, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. I would hate to have to take a life, but yes, if it comes down to it, I'd rather take somebody else's life than lose my own.
I mean, I'll
be honest about that. But what really drove it home for me, I don't even have to think about it, kind of like you didn't even have to think about it, is when it comes to my wife or my kids, that dilemma is barely even there. It's that's what I'm doing.
And so it is the fact that you have the power to make the choice that is what appeals to you the most.
I definitely appreciate the safety it gives me, but you know that I would be lying if I said that's primarily. I have a lot of guns that there is no way in heck you could look at it and be like, oh, he has that for personal protection. There's no way. I mean, I like them because they're fun. You take them out to the range and it is just fun to pull the trigger and watch something blow up downrange. That is just a fun thing, and there is no other reason beyond that. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think that our culture, in some regards, has taught us that that's shameful. If you like a fast car just because it goes fast, then you should be ashamed of that. And if you like that gun just because it's big and it's ugly and it's got flashlights and forward grips and all sorts of cool accessories on it, you shouldn't like that because it's a gun and that's bad. And I don't take that view. I think it's fun. Yeah. And I don't think there's anything wrong with buying something just for fun.
I feel like I could do a long, long series of episodes on things that society says we shouldn't do that turn out to be great.
Yeah. You know, it kind of, I find it interesting that you compare it to cars, because in my mind, cars and guns are very similar to me.
Yeah, yes. I believe that.
Yeah.
Because, like, both with a gun and with a car, I choose not to have one for both of them because I feel like I don't have the confidence in myself to properly handle either one of those.
Can you parse that a little bit? Because I think that really underscores your point, and I don't think it's something people totally understand. You choose to not drive a vehicle because you feel like it's irresponsible for you to be behind the wheel of one.
Yeah, because I feel like a car is just, in essence, a very large weapon at the end of the day.
It's thousands of pounds of metal that you can smash into another human being.
That you fly past other ones at the same time.
To put very succinctly, and I use this in class all the time, my 45 Glock puts out around 1,200 foot-pounds of torque. When I get my Jeep rolling, I'm approaching 500,000 before I reach 15 miles an hour.
And in fact, if you go back and look in history, they were just called death machines. Yeah. Like, these things are, like, the idea, in 100 years, our kids will look back and look at this and go, wow, they actually drove the cars themselves? That's amazing. Like, did they have, like they had red lights and green lights?
That's not even factoring
in. It'll be
in.
Laughable. In 100 years, humans driving cars will be laughable.
That's not even factoring in the fact that all of the other humans on the road are making the same decision. And I already don't trust myself. Why would I trust somebody I don't know to be on the same road as me? I'm basically putting my life in their hands, too. So in general, I don't like driving. If I didn't have to go places, I would not get in a car.
Yeah, and I think I wonder if Noah feels this way, too. The way I feel comfortable about that is I honestly believe, and this is great because probably everybody listening feels the same way. I honestly believe I'm better than every single other driver on the road.
I believe that you are better than every other driver on the road. Here's the thing. We were driving and you and I were having some fun driving different places or whatever. And there was somebody else in the car and we were having a conversation about it. And he said, you let Chris drive your rental cars? And I'm like, there's no one I would trust more. And he goes, why? And I'm like, well, a couple of reasons. One is I have full faith that if anything did happen, I wouldn't even have to ask him. He would just say, oh, sorry, I broke it. Let me write the check. The second thing is, and the more important thing is, you have more attention to detail than any other human being I have ever met in my entire life. So other people, by the time they realize what they are going to do or what they're doing, you've already realized what they're doing, figured out where you're going past them and what's going to happen 10 minutes after that. Like, you're so far ahead of what everyone else is thinking that this, by the way, is while he's carrying on a conversation in the car. You're capable of multitasking so well and thinking and paying so much attention to detail that I think it does make you a better driver than everyone else on the road.
Now, to me, it's kind of the opposite. The fact that Chris multitasks so much kind of freaks me out in a way when he's driving because it feels like he's not always paying attention to the driving.
Absolutely wrong. Absolutely wrong. You know how many times when I was driving with him in the RV, we were going down to pick up Ham, and somebody would like pull out in front of him and he would be right on the brakes and just like, we're already slowing down. I'm like, what's happening? That guy's going to cut. There he is. Cut me off. I'm like, how did you know that? Well, I saw him coming up over here and then that car moved over. So he was going to come up. And so I realized that guy wouldn't have any place to go. So you have to cut. He figures all that out. And again, while he's having a conversation.
I'm not actually criticizing his driving ability. It's more just how it makes me feel mentally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, actually, Hadia felt the same way. She was very, very uncomfortable initially.
Yeah.
And now, when we go to family events, she's like, oh, yeah, he's a way better driver than me. Because, yeah.
I'll tell you, the biggest compliment paid to you is I don't sleep when other people are driving a vehicle because I feel like it's my job.
Really?
No.
Really?
No. I sit and I pay attention so that when we're about to hit something or die, I can say something, at least try to save my own life.
Wow.
I think
the way
I fell
you
asleep,
go out, the
yeah,
way
I,
you...
Yeah, when you drive, I fall asleep 10 minutes into it.
See, I do the same thing, but I never get comfortable. Like, I still criticize my mother's driving.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's been driving me for my entire life.
God, I'd love to play you in a racing game, Rikai.
Oh, I'd wreck you.
You'd probably do great, yeah.
But I won't be comfortable with cars until people aren't driving them because people make mistakes, and I'm more comfortable trusting my life to a piece of software that will do the same thing every time, no matter what. Because then you at least know why it did it. And
let's be honest. I mean, I have way more faith if my truck knows that 25, 35, 45 cars in front of me, they're beginning to apply 25% of their brakes. Yeah. That gives my car a level of heads up that I could never have because I don't have that level of information or connectivity.
Yeah, but you know five cars ahead of time, whereas most people know when they've hit the car in front of them. Oh, well, I guess they're stopping.
I many times though I'm driving and I think to myself, I can't wait till the computers take over. When I watch intersections and I watch us stop and then I let one side goes and then the other side goes, when computers take over, it'll be like data packets. Go, 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 go. There'll be no collisions because everything will be timed, everything will be ID'd, and they'll all be able to flow. Traffic will be so much better. And once computers control our driving, cars will be on demand. And so it's an interesting thing because I think when you look back at it, we're going to look at cars a lot like we look at guns. That's what I personally think.
Yeah.
But I don't know if necessarily it means things are going to change with guns.
One of the things that does is it brings cars more in parallel with guns because it moves cars to being completely a tool. And then if you want to use it for other things, you go and you get additional licensing. So if you want to drive a car manually for pleasure, you'll probably end up having to go and get a more special license.
Interesting.
Future. Both with cars and guns, the current licensing is kind of lax in some ways.
Well, there is no licensing for guns.
You don't have to. Well, it depends on where you live, doesn't it?
Kind of. So I'll start with this. The Constitution says that everyone has the right to a gun. So constitutionally speaking, you can't then say that you have to get licensed to get a gun. Now, individual states require, some states require what's known as a purchase or permit to purchase, which is basically you having to ask the county permission to go buy a firearm. And I even disagree with that. I do, however, think, obviously as a firearm instructor, that anyone that's going to purchase any tool that has potential danger, whether that's a car or a gun or an air nailer, you should go learn how to use those tools effectively without hurting yourself.
See, I think that's where you and I disagree.
Sure.
I am completely for the ownership of guns.
Mm-hmm.
I even recreational use, protection, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that people should be required to have a certain level of competency to be able to use those things, period.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that people should have a certain level of competency to exercise other rights, like, for instance, the right to vote? Should we make people?
Yes, actually, I do.
Okay. Well, at least you're consistent. That's cool.
I also think that there are way too many drivers on the road that should not be on the road because our licensing laws are way too lax.
Driving is a privilege. So, I mean, when it comes to driving, like, technically, you can make all the restrictions you want on driving and you won't hear an argument from me. It's when you get into any of your rights that I would take a firm stance and say, well, let's back up now. We need to make sure that we're allotting those rights to everyone. But yeah, I would be fine if they want to restrict driving.
I don't know. I feel like the fact that the right to bear arms in the Constitution kind of puts guns in a position that they really shouldn't be.
Let me, and maybe Noah, I'm sure you would probably know, but I don't actually want to go too much further without making this clear. The mm-hmm. Constitution doesn't guarantee the right to bear arms. What the Constitution does is it says the federal government should not get involved with the public's ability to bear arms. As in, it's not that you don't have this ensconced right. What you have is you have this. The federal government shall never get involved in this area.
Yeah.
Well, is that no? Well, so my understanding is that the Constitution is basically a contract for the states to abide by if they want to be part of the union known as the federal government. So if you want to be a part of the federal government, part of the United States, then you will agree to, here's the contract that you agree to. And one of those things is that an individual has a right, D.C. versus Heller confirms, Supreme Court confirms that the individual has a right to own a firearm, just like an individual has a right to go vote. And you can't pass legislation that would stop somebody from their right without due process.
Mm-hmm. The Second Amendment reads, a well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Mm-hmm.
So the right for the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. So it doesn't say that you have a constitutional right to guns. Mm-hmm. It says that when it comes to your having guns, the federal government has no oversight.
Yeah.
That's how I read that.
Well, I'll tell you what. If we got to a point where we stopped pushing for federal gun legislation and let the states handle it, whether or not I agree or disagree, the Constitution in the 10th Amendment says that ultimately the states get to decide things that aren't the purview of the federal government. And if we got to that point where each state, even if 49 states banned guns altogether, even if I don't believe that that is constitutional, as long as I had one state that I could go to and own guns, to me personally, that would be an acceptable compromise. The problem is right now, my biggest concern is that we are putting this one size fits all. And so the people that are living in a crowded 500 apartment complex in Manhattan are subject to the same rules as me living in a house in, BFE, North Dakota.
I think this, even though I don't own a gun, I think this is where you and I fundamentally agree, is it seems like a state issue. And I think this is a perfect example of how the United States is set up. And this is why it should be a state issue, is different states have different regional issues.
I just find it really weird that at the end of the day, gun ownership, vehicle ownership, and voting, they're all tools. And I don't know why, just because those two of those three are mentioned in the Constitution, they should mm-hmm. be treated any differently than the third.
Because two are a right and one is a privilege.
Look at that. My girlfriend, Debbie. She just sent me a beautiful, I just got the most wonderful telegram ever. It's a bucket of KFC. A bucket of KFC.
A bucket?
Yeah.
A bucket?
What'd you give me, baby? What'd you give me?
I got you a big bucket of chicken and extra coleslaw and turnovers. Those are for the kids. Leave them alone.
Are you eating it right now? You smell like...
I'm freaking hungry.
What do you smell? Oh, I smell the fry.
I'm hungry now.
Yeah. Lick my finger, baby. And I got enough for you, Rika. You don't have to lick my finger.
See, here's the thing, Noah. If anything's ever going to break Jupiter Broadcasting apart, it's food.
Yeah, but okay. See, she just made the critical thing. She said she got me some. We're good, Chris.
Yeah. So every now and then, and it's a rarity, but every now and then I'm eating regular food. And of course, Rika's got a great staple of food. And I'll come in with something. He's like, God, that smells good. What was it like? It was like a breakfast sandwich or something recently.
Oh, it was hash browns.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
You got hash browns from fast food. I don't really like fast food most of the time, but there was like 3 days where, because Chris brought hash browns to the studio, I wanted hash browns. I was so jealous of him, I considered strangling him and stealing his hash browns.
I guess you went upstairs and reflected on it for quite a bit. Meanwhile, Rikai comes downstairs. This is about 10:35 in the morning. Decides to make himself a breakfast lasagna. And I at first I'm like, okay, there goes Rikai. He's putting his lasagna in the oven. But about 11 o'clock.
Can't be that good. It's frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
11 o'clock, the entire studio was filled with the most incredible dynamic smells. I could smell the basil. I could smell the cheese. I could smell the red sauce. I could smell the browning cheese as it cooked under the oven. It smelled incredible. It was honestly one of the most delicious smells in my life. And I became immediately jealous of Rikai's food.
Yeah. So what it comes down to is, if JB ever fails, it's probably because one of us murdered the other one so we could steal their food.
Get murdered, because I don't ever steal other people's food. I'm usually the one going on the food run.
That's true. That's true. No is the great equalizer.
Yeah.
I feel like there's no solution, though. How do we solve this, Chris? How can we not be at each other's throats over this delicious food?
We should move the studio to a buffet.
No, I got a better idea. They have this thing in Grand Forks now for college students. It's like they can get like a food meal pass thing for the school. And so you pay like $1,500 for the year. And then you can get 3 meals a day from any of the on-campus little diner things. So a bunch of restaurants have teamed up and they do the same thing. You can buy like a meal pass for like $1,500, and then you can eat any meal at any of the participating restaurants, like 3 meals a day or whatever. For that flat fee on that card. So what you do is you need to start that program and get like KFC and that really great, amazing, extraordinarily great Chinese restaurant.
Chinese place.
Yeah. Get them on board and get like Applebee's, a couple other ones. Thai place. And then we just pay them a monthly fee. Five Guys. God, that would save me so much money. And then we pay them a monthly fee, and then we can all go to any of those restaurants and eat as part of like a JB benefit thing.
Great, Noah. You can fund it.
You don't have to fund it. You go negotiate. And you say, we're going to give you $1,500. And then
you're our negotiator.
Okay, I'll negotiate.
Sorry, I got to swallow some chicken.
This guy, he's standing in here eating chicken in front of me.
What a
he can't
dick.
Wait long enough to get a plate even.
No.
Chicken falling on the floor. He's an animal.
I just devoured it.